Hello, friends.
Hello.
Hello.
Welcome to Book Squad Goals. There are only three of us today instead of four. Emily is taking a little break, and she'll be back next time.
Emily spilled coffee on her computer. Let's say just,
and but it's getting fixed.
Yeah. Taking a computer break. Yeah, so the three of us being Kelly, Mary, and Susan, will be talking about The Paper Wasp by Lauren Acampora today. We are going to spoil that book all the way, so that's your warning. To kick us off, I would like to know if you could be any celebrity's personal assistant, who would it be and why?
Mary,
this is hard.
It's hard. I was, all of my celebrity obsessions are people who I who I desire romantically or sexually. So I feel like that's not a good person to be a personal assistant for.
Probably not.
So I'm like, what celebrities do I like that I don't want to sleep with? And it's really hard to figure out. I think I came to the conclusion that maybe I would choose, like, Meryl Streep.
Interesting.
Because I would get to, like, meet a lot of cool, interesting people. And then, like, watch, like, a lot of real artistry at work, which I think would be inspiring. And she seems like she wouldn't be, like, a dick.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So, earlier today, I heard that John Mulaney checked into rehab.
Oh, yeah.
And I love John Mulaney. And so now all I can think is, like, it would be cool to be his personal assistant. But now I don't know, because, like, cocaine. You know?
And does he even have, he doesn't seem like the type of person who would even have an assistant. Like, do comedians?
I don't know. He might.
Maybe.
He's pretty, you know.
Quite famous.
I'm going to say I would like to be an assistant to Hayao Miyazaki. Oh. The director of, a lot of the Studio Ghibli films. He's very old. So I imagine that, like, being his assistant would be a lot of making tea and, like, making sure he has all of his
It's not a mini-year commitment.
Probably fielding some phone calls and stuff. There would be a language barrier, so I don't know how it would work out.
You'd be sending out
last one day.
Multiple retirement announcements that would then be.
Oh yeah, he's probably revolved. Like, I'm quitting. Just kidding. but I watched a documentary about him, and he just seemed like such a sweet grandpa. So I think that would be nice, but like also maybe John Mulaney for that chaotic energy. I don't know.
Both good choices. I, Susan, am, that was Mary that just talked, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Kelly first.
Oh, yeah, Kelly went first.
This is now Susan, and, my approach to answering my own question here was, where would I get the hottest gossip? So, I am
not Miyazaki.
Chris Harrison.
Ooh!
Host of the Bachelor franchise shows.
That would be so good.
I just feel
good.
Like I would get a lot of cool inside scoop things. And I'd probably get to go to Mexico every year for Bachelor in Paradise. I'd probably get to travel a lot.
You'd get a lot of mimosas.
He doesn't seem like he really actually requires that much. So maybe I wouldn't have to try that hard either. So yeah, I'm in it for the hot goss and the travel.
That's something I didn't consider.
Oh, and Emily wanted us to make it known that her choice would be Daniel Radcliffe because she wants to be his best friend.
Yes.
But is not interested in hooking up with him.
No.
Yeah, just for the record.
So, solid choice, Emily. We miss you already. Okay, let's get into this novel. I'm going to read the Goodreads summary. Buckle up. An electrifying debut novel from the acclaimed author of The Wonder Garden, The Paper Wasp is a riveting, knife-edge story of two women's dark friendship, of twisted ambition, set against the backdrop of contemporary Hollywood. In small-town Michigan, Abby Graben leads a solitary life. Once a bright student on the cusp of a promising art career, she now languishes in her childhood bedroom, trudging to and from her job as a supermarket cashier. Each day, she is taunted from the magazine racks by the success of her former best friend, Elise, a rising Hollywood starlet whose life enpictures Abby obsessively scrapbooks. At night, Abby escapes through the films of her favorite director, Auguste Perret. I feel like he's French,
yeah,
or something. A cult figure known for his, we're going to say Auguste Perrin, a cult figure known for his creative institute, the Rhizome. Inspired by Perrin, Abby draws fantastical storyboards based on her often, how do I say this? Premonitory, probably. Dreams. You know, dreams with premonitions. Yes, a visionary gift she keeps hidden. I've just never seen that word until reading this. So I was like, oh. When Abby encounters Elise again at their high school reunion, she is surprised and warmed that Elise still considers her not only a friend, but a brilliant storyteller and true artist. Elise's unexpected faith in Abby reignites in her a dormant hunger, and when Elise offhandedly tells Abby to look her up if she's ever in L.A., Abby soon arrives on her doorstep. There, Abby discovers that although Elise is flourishing professionally, behind her glossy magazine veneer, she is lonely and disillusioned. Ever the supportive friend, Abby becomes enmeshed in Elise's world, even as she guards her own dark secret and burning desire for greatness. As she edges closer to Elise, the Rhizome, and her own artistic ambitions, the dynamic shifts between the two friends until Abby can only see one way to grasp the future that awaits her. The Paper Wasp is a thrilling, unexpected journey into the psyche and imagination of a woman determined to fulfill her destiny from one of our most unique and incisive writers. That was a very thorough Goodreads summary.
Thorough and yet also somehow, like, kind of not the feeling I got when I read
it. Yeah, it was a different book than I expected, I think, from seeing the summary. Before we get into the questions, I'm going to give a little content warning for suicide talk. There's a suicide attempt that we may be chatting about at some point. So there you go.
Be aware.
Be warned. Okay. So the first thing that threw me off when I opened the book, this novel is narrated by Abby as if it is addressed directly to Elise. Did this narration style work for you? And then I have a follow-up question that I'll just ask at the same time, which is that Abby is also an unreliable narrator because of her obsession with this filmmaker, Perrin, and Elise, her premonition dreams, and her history with mental illness. So how does that also affect your experience reading the book and how you viewed Abby and the other characters, like, through Abby's eyes?
So number one, no, it did not work. I hate a second person narration. I hate it. Yeah. This like goes back also kind of to my, like, it's partially what I dislike about, what's it called when it's a letters back and forth
epistolary
type of thing. Yeah. Yes, epistolary. This goes back to my dislike of that, but also just, like, my other problem. So when it's epistolary, my problem is, like, oh, there's, like, way too much detail in here. You would never write this in a letter. Like, you're not going to write out full conversations with quotation marks and shit in a letter to someone.
Yeah.
My problem here is, like, is this written? Like, did she write it down somewhere? Is she giving it to Elise? Like,
I wondered that as well.
Like, is this, like, something she sealed up?
That's a long thing to write.
Yeah, but, and it also doesn't seem out of the realm of possibility considering what type of person Abby is. I'm like, I could imagine her like writing this entire thing and like sealing it up in a manila envelope and like sending it with no return address or some shit. But I'm like, you know, what is the purpose of having it addressed in second person if it's not actually going to her and like to Elise? And like, I understand that Abby is obsessed with Elise, and so she thinks of everything in terms of Elise, but also I just felt like it felt like a gimmick that just went on for too long, and I did not feel like the writing in this book was strong enough to like make the gimmick work. You know, it just felt, it felt very much like this is something I'm doing. you know, it's like that when you can, like when you're watching an actor and you can like feel them acting, that's like how I felt reading this.
I hear what you're saying, because this is how I feel about Chuck Palahniuk books. It's like each book has a gimmick and I'm like, well, what's your gimmick this time, Chuck? Like, what are you going to do this time? Oh, here it is. Right. I will say, though, that on the flip side, it did really work for me. I do like epistolary novels. I do like second person, even though, like, I totally understand the criticisms of it. But for me, it works. I think it maybe worked too well because I did not enjoy inhabiting Abby's mind.
Yeah.
But I think that's one of the, like, one of the benefits, if we want to call it a benefit, of the second person is it's, you're in the narrator's head just like you would be if it was in the first person. But in the second person, it really does, like, lend that voice of obsession, because you do have to, like, address someone in the second person. Like, if you just leave it a vague, unspecified you, the reader's going to be like, not me.
Yeah.
You know? So, like, that it was sort of addressed to Elise worked for me. Because Abby is so obsessed with Elise. Mm-hmm. And I can see, like, where it would, could be gimmicky. Or, like, I don't think, you know, like, if this author's next novel also was in second person, I'd be like, wait a minute. You can only do this once. That's, you can't always do this every time. But, like, I think it worked. It worked for me because it did give it that sort of, like, that stalker tone.
Yeah. It definitely gave it a stalker tone. That's for sure.
Yeah. I think it helped at least to make it, to, because, like, if there's something that I will say about this book is that, like, I did finish it really quickly, and I think it's, like, a lot of the quotes on the like, review quotes are, like, compelling, hypnotic. Yeah. And, like, I would agree that those things are true, because this book kind of, like, you just keep going. Like, you just keep reading it, because, and I do think that, like, the second person contributes to that sense of, I felt like the second person was, like, part of what kept me reading, because it does feel, it almost, like, makes things go faster, but I'm not really sure why.
Yeah. I'm somewhere in the middle on this, I think. Like, when I first started the book, it really did throw me off, like, in a way where it was, like, sort of uncomfortable to read it, but then I got used to it and kind of, like, sunk into that, and then it, and I think part of the point of doing it is to be a little uncomfortable, I guess. So I can see why it was done that way. It did also make me think that Elise was dead. Like, was that was going to be, like, a reveal or something at the end? Because, like, I, to Kelly's point, like, if it's not, like, actually being, like, given to Elise, then maybe Elise is, like, dead, and this is sort of, like, a confession kind of thing. And so I thought Elise was going to die at some point, but that's not what happens. But in terms of, like, the other half of this question, like, that she's an unreliable narrator, yeah, I also, like, being in her head is really unsettling, and I kind of wondered the whole time, like, how clear of a picture of Elise we were really getting.
Yeah.
You know, is she really as like vapid and stupid and unartistic as Abby thinks she is? Or is Abby just like so obsessed with being artistic that, and like is jealous and all of that, that the picture we get of her is like this stupid starlet who's like drunk all the time?
Right. And also Abby seems to have no respect for like the art of acting. She's like, she's like, actors are just empty vessels that we fill up. And it's like, bitch, like, you're not special. Like, shut up.
Also, she says all this coming from a place of not working in the film industry at all.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, is she completely
delusional or not? That's.
Yeah. I mean, this is a good point.
Well, and it was also frustrating to me because she, like, we're led to believe that she, or, like, I don't know. I got the impression that she was delusional, you know, that Abby was, like, not, you know, she obviously has had these, like, mental illness histories, and she's obsessed with Elise, and she's stalking her, and she's doing a lot of erratic, unpredictable things, and she is an unreliable narrator. But then, if we are to believe that all this stuff actually happens, and the way that it happens, it's like she was right the whole time, and she was special, and she did, like,
yeah,
that's what really bothers me, is that, like, somehow she ended up getting exactly what she wanted, like,
she's special, but, like, in a culty way?
Yeah.
You know, in a, like, she's really compliant to this dude who kind of seems to have set up a cult.
Yeah.
You know, so, like,
kind of. Like, that's, it's super culty.
It is. But, you know, like, is she special or is she just, like, willing to go along with his bullshit?
That's true.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Which it seems like a lot of people are willing to go along with.
Yeah. Well, and, like, if anyone showed up on his doorstep and was like, look at my paintings, would he have been like, yes, become my partner?
She's a big big fan of showing up to show up places. And this is why I think that, like, Elise is not really the way that we see her, like, through Abby's eyes, because, like, I think Elise is just probably really nice and accommodating and, like, doesn't know how to respond when what could be a crazy person shows up. And, you know, like, she seems taken aback, but she's really nice to her. And I think that really, maybe she really feels sorry for Abby and probably knows a little bit more about how shitty Abby's life is.
It's possible, but she also, like, begins to behave really toxically.
Well, she's a full-on alcoholic.
She is a full alcoholic.
This woman is downing bottles and bottles of wine, like, at casual lunches, which is remarkable. And has, like, a full-on Lindsay Lohan-style spiral. Honestly, I could read more of that because the question I almost asked at the beginning of this was, like, not about, like, a celebrity meltdown, but just, like, which celebrity gossip do you, like, really actually want to know about? Like, what's the gossip you live for?
Anyway. I used to, every day when I worked at Publix, I would, like, get a tabloid magazine from, like, the aisle, and I would, like, take it to the break room with me and, like, read the whole thing and then put it back, like, after my lunch break was over.
You're just like Abby.
Yeah.
Just working at the grocery store and...
Exactly.
Reading.
And, okay, here's another thing. Abby makes Michigan sound like a fucking hell place that is horrible. Guess what? Michigan is beautiful.
Yeah.
And really nice.
Yeah.
So,
I'm sure there are winter. Bad places.
Yeah, but the way that she describes Ann Arbor in particular is like Ann Arbor's quite lovely.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. Like, and it's like, girl, it's a college town. Like, but, I mean, that's probably where she, pretty like, liberal.
That's where she had her breakdown and where she jumped off a bridge.
Mm-hmm. Any so, place can be crappy if you feel lonely enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I imagine, like, living in your parents' house, that after that happened and just feeling stuck would probably mean, like, oh, Michigan's the pits because you're living in your parents' house. Also, I had so many questions in the beginning about her parents because she just, like, steals money from them and leaves and then is like, I'm just not going to pick up the phone, like, literally ever when they call. I'm like, I feel like they're going to come looking for you. Or, like,
they didn't, though.
They're probably really worried that she's, like, not mentally okay, which they'd be right. She's not.
I mean, somehow, though, it's almost like her sister is worse.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
And I think also there's, like, the idea that she expresses that maybe they're relieved to be, like, you know, rid of her in a way, which I'm sure, like, you know, you don't want to think that, like, parents don't, like, love their kid enough to, like, try to help them. But also, if she's saying, you know, if she's been home this whole time and has been mentally okay this whole time at home since she got back, and then she's like, I'm going to LA to see Elise because we reconnected, I'm sure there's a part of them that's like, well, I guess things are looking up for her or something. Like, they want
they're
to
not,
believe
parents.
Her.
No, yeah. They're looking bleak.
Yeah.
I also just, by the way, love the idea that a full-on movie star would go to their high school reunion. Like,
I know.
A lot of very regular average people are like, no, I'm not going to that. There's no way that you would, like, fly in from L.A. to be like, hello, peasants, like,
yeah,
it's
just
me.
To be petty, just to be like, I am so much better than you guys.
It did seem like Elise was super concerned with, like, being seen and managing her, like, public persona. So yeah. I guess, like, it could look good for you to be like, look, I'm just a normal person.
That that reunion scene, though, I know this is way off of the question I asked, and I'm just, like, on a tangent now, but that reunion scene I actually thought was really super well written. Like, I was like, this is exactly, like, I can see this little event room.
Yes.
And these specific people. It was very.
The woman who comes up and is like, you don't recognize me because I lost 100 pounds. And Abby's like, okay.
There were so many. I went to my 10-year high school reunion a few years ago, and I mean, there were, like, plenty of people that I was like, I don't, like, I know that I've seen you before, but, like, I need your name tag. I need to look at your boob so I can see your name tag.
Justine and I wanted to go to ours, but it would have been this year, so that obviously didn't happen.
Well, it's in Florida. I'm surprised it didn't happen.
I know, that's true.
They're good, like, point. This is important. The memories are important.
Yeah.
The memories.
Do it for the memories, Kelly. Go anyway. Okay, moving on. So, what exactly is going on with Abby and Elise's relationship? Like, it's obviously troubled and toxic, but is Abby, like, in love with Elise, or does she hate Elise? Does she, like, want to be Elise, or does she want to take her down and destroy her?
There are lots of moments where Elise, or where Abby is, like, fantasizing about Raphael, who's Elise's, like, boyfriend, lover, and then she has this whole kind of, like, you know, flirtation situation with this, that guy, Paul,
Paul,
who she never actually sleeps with, but has, she like,
did.
They kiss.
I thought she
and
did
I don't think they do.
After she's living with him.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, they do. Okay, never mind.
But it's,
she
it's
does sleep with him.
Not a big deal.
It was clearly not very memorable sex. So.
But anyway, it seems like most of her like blatant sexual fantasies are focused on men.
Yeah.
And the stuff with Elise definitely feels more like a like fixation on wanting to like be her or wanting to feel like she's special. Like there's a lot of this like I like her being obsessed with being special.
Yeah.
And I don't know if she loves her, you know?
It really felt like in the beginning it felt like that's what it was. But yeah. Once she like gets to LA, because there's that dream where they're like on the couch together and
right.
It's a lot of like staring into each other's eyes kind of things and like recognizing something in each other that like
yeah.
They had both been thinking about each other this whole time. But then when she gets to LA, it does seem a lot more like a type of jealousy where it's like, well, it's unfair that this person who's like not really talented gets to do all this stuff and I am actually special and I'm just kind of waiting on this person.
Yeah.
And then later it does seem like she just wants to take her out. Like,
yeah.
And this is why I thought like maybe she legit is going to kill her. Like, she seems like she could murder a person for sure.
Yeah. She's also very obsessed with like Elisa's beauty and her looks and also constantly comparing herself to that, which, yeah, like, leads me to believe that she also is, like, angry that Elise gets special attention and praise because of just the way that she was born into the world. And Abby's like, I have real talent, but I'm not pretty, so therefore I'm not, like, you know, admired and praised in the same way. Yeah. Which, like, all of the things, like, a lot of the things that Abby is dealing with are relatable to a certain extent, but she's, like, such a, like, frustrating character, and she's so annoying that I had a hard time feeling bad for her at all.
Like, what was the most, and what annoyed you the most about?
What annoyed me the most was her obsession with, like, I know about film.
Yeah.
And I, like, that kind of stuff really just drove me crazy, because I'm like, you, like, she has such, like, an elitist view of herself and of film and the film industry, and you can tell she's one of those people who's like, if it's popular, it's not good.
Yeah.
And it's just, like, I don't know. It feels very childish, and, like, it feels like she went to, like, film school for a year and then was, like, permanently trapped in, like, that, like, mindset for the rest of her life.
Yeah. That, like, when you said the, like, I'm artistic thing, it reminds me of what you said when we were talking about Little Fires Everywhere, and you were, like, so mad about the photography art.
Well, the art of this was just as bad. The descriptions of the art were terrible. I was like, this doesn't sound cool at all.
Well, okay, so as I was reading this, I was like, is this a real filmmaker? Because this actually does sound like some, like, bullshit artsy stuff that you would watch in a film class and be like, okay, just because it's complicated doesn't make it good. Like,
right.
It feels like that kind of stuff to me. So I was, like, Googling, like, is this a person? Like, it's not. but I thought it might be a real actual filmmaker.
No. And it's that, like, because in the book, he's, like, still working. And I feel like if he was, like, we would know who that was if that was a real person.
Well, I don't know that I would, actually. But especially because he's like a reclusive kind of mystery person.
But I think the vibe of him is kind of like a, you know, like a Paul Thomas Anderson or like a Christopher Nolan, like one of these like male directors who's like making like, you know, complicated, like, art films every year or every couple of years that everyone has to have an opinion about, and all of the bros on film Twitter are obsessed with. And that's what she is. She's like a bro on film Twitter. That is her personality. And it just really is just rubbed me the wrong way.
She is exactly a film bro, and I like wasn't able to articulate it, but especially the way she's like, nobody understands his films like I do.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, yeah, they do. There is a whole cult about it.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. Does Elise? Probably not.
She's an idiot. But also, like,
at what level are you understanding his films better? You know, because, like, I don't think there's any substance to saying, like, you know, dreams.
Yeah.
We're all tapping into something when we dream. Like, that's not really a solid thesis.
No, none of the art in this, and it's like Little Fires Everywhere, where none of the art in this is good, sounds good, or interesting. Like, right. I don't want to see any of these movies. I don't want to look at any of these paintings. They sound corny as fuck. They sound like I would find them at the, like, Winter Park Art Festival in Orlando, Florida. That's what this sounds like to me.
It sounds like, who's that big director?
Mary, I was just thinking about that.
Godard. It's like people who like his films to me. Because, like, I tried to watch one time and I was like, I hate this. I hate it.
Well, it's pretentious, like, it's French New Wave. It's like, it's a specific type of film that, like, certain people, like, obsess over and idolize. And, like, it's like, yes, they have a place in film history, but, like, liking those movies doesn't make you a superior person, you know?
No. But that's what people act like, you know? It's like, oh, well, I like this, so clearly I'm smart. You like Bridesmaids? That's a stupid movie.
Stupid people like that. Yeah, that's the thing with Abby, is she's like, it's like she could never conceive of enjoying anything, like, commercial or anything lighthearted or, like, created without, like, the pure intention of being important.
Which, well, like, I know that type of person, because I was that type of person for a while, where I was like, this isn't art, this is a stupid comedy. And then,
eventually... many of us were that person.
Eventually I was like, why can't I just enjoy things?
Mm-hmm. I just want to enjoy something.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, is she's stuck in the mindset of, like, a teenager who thinks they're cool.
Yeah. Well, and she, I think she, like, gets off on the tortured part of being a tortured artist. And and I think because some of this stuff seems to come really easily to Elise, who probably is actually really talented as an actress, or she wouldn't be landing, like, lead roles in biopics, probably. I mean, not that bad actors have never done big roles. they do, but, like, I get the sense that, like, her disdain stuff Elise does is not really that Elise is bad at it, but that it's, like, other people like it.
Yeah. Well, and she never says Elise is bad at acting. She just implies that being good at acting isn't a worthwhile pursuit.
Well, she kind of does a couple, like, when Elise is preparing to play Joan Didion, she's like, she's like, yeah, you thought you were in character, but, like, you really are nothing like her, and you never will be.
Like, damn, that was the point, though. Like, by that point in the novel, Abby was in bitch-eating crackers mode. You know, we're like, no matter what the other person does, it's gonna make you mad. We're like, look at her eating crackers. Like, she owns the place. So, like, nothing Elise could have done at that point would have been okay. She would have been like, look at her over there trying to be Joan Didion.
You're so right.
Well,
Like, she was thoroughly hating Elise at that point, which is weird. Like, the shift between loving her and hating her, I guess it happened gradually, but like Kelly, like, I just read this book really fast, and so I felt like I had whiplash. I was like, weren't you obsessing over her? Didn't you love her?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is why I thought she might.
I think as soon as she becomes her personal assistant, that's when things start to go downhill.
Which, like, is understandable because, I mean, like, when you're working with someone, that's a totally different relationship dynamic than being friends with him. And there's, like, all of a sudden all of these expectations on you as an employee and not just a friend. Which it seems like Elise was pretty chill. You know, she was just like, I don't know, take some calls and, like, I'm going to buy you this $300 swimsuit. Enjoy.
Right.
But, yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think that's, like, I don't know how you would have boundaries doing that.
Yeah. Well, and she's also, the other thing about Abby is she's so, she has, like a sense of entitlement that, like, mm-hmm. she becomes this personal assistant, and then she's bitter that Elise treats her like an assistant, which she is. That's her job. Where, and then Abby's like, I'm the talented one. Like, why am I an assistant? Because you didn't put in the work. Like, you haven't spent any time in this industry at all. You've never had a single job in it. Then the idea of getting an internship to you is insulting, even though you have literally no experience. Like, Elise initially tells her, like, I'm going to get you an internship. And Abby's like, no, an internship. Like, bitch, what do you, how do you think this works? Like, you think you're just going to get, like, hired as, like, a set, like, an art director on a set, like, immediately from a painting that you did?
That's not how that works at all. And also, like, it's interesting that Abby is juxtaposed with Paul, who's like, yeah, you know, I came here with nothing, and I just kind of, like, randomly met some people who got me a job as a lowly camera guy that just drove the cameras around everywhere on set. And, like, he is putting in time and, like, trying to learn stuff.
Yeah, he's the only good person in this book.
Yeah. And even then, she's like, oh, Paul, gross.
And she's like, your documentary won't ever mean anything. It's like, what?
Well, I also kind of understood where she was coming from. That was the one thing I was like, yeah, I kind of get it. Because she's like, people already know about this. They don't want to be sad about it anymore.
But also, at least he's, like, not wrong he's doing about something. That. And she's not.
Yes.
Exactly. Exactly.
She's just having dream sessions, which are...
I fucking hate her, okay? That's the thing. I hate this character.
When I finished the book and I was in such a weird mood earlier. We kind of talked about this before we started recording, but I was in such a weird mood after I finished the book and I was, like, perceiving, like, everyone was mad at me and I was, like, trying to tell Todd, like, are you mad at me? What have I done? And it's because I spent so much time in Abby's head and, like, I didn't want to.
Yeah.
But I think,
will.
I mean, that's why second person really works. I mean, I haven't rated this book yet. I'm not trying to, like, skip ahead, but, like, I haven't rated this book yet because on one hand, I'm like, did I enjoy it? But on the other hand, I'm like, isn't it the mark of an effective book to, like, make you feel a certain way?
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know that this made me feel anything other than annoyed and angry. And then a part of me is like, was I reading this so fast? Because I was like, I just want to get it over with. Like, I don't even know. I mean, this is not to say that there isn't anything good about this book, because there are things.
Well,
but sorry.
No, you're fine. I just, I don't want to skip. I'm going to, like, be tempted to talk about my rating if we start talking about it now. So let's talk about the subplot, which we've started touching on the artistic stuff, but, like, the subplot involving this artistic institute, the Rhizome, that Elise attends basically because, like, she can afford to do it, and she wants to start making more artistic stuff, so she's taken seriously as an actress, but this is the place that was founded by this filmmaker that Abby idolizes, and so she starts going and having these like dream sessions there too, basically because Elise is able to like get her one, and then she then she like weasels her way in because she starts working there.
Yeah.
So, but she doesn't tell Elise that she's still going. But anyway, like, what was going on with this subplot? Like, what did it add to the story, or did it? Like, just what's your take on this whole thing?
Is it Scientology?
It is Scientology. It's very Scientology because it's like Hollywood specific.
Like, what is the process that's happening here? Because, like, she would go in to these dream sessions and sit with her counselor, and we would read what the what she was imagining, and then the counselor would be like, "Good, you're doing great." Like, what is she doing?
Well, it seems like, so, like, when she was talking about, like, all the theory and stuff at the beginning of the book, she was like, I've read all his books, I know all the theory. It seemed like it was based on dreams, but also the, like, dots you see when you close your eyes or, like, rub your eyes too much. Because that's how she would, like, center herself in the dream session, and she would, like, close her eyes and then, like, focus on a specific color or a specific dot or something she saw when she closed her eyes. Which I understand that as a description, and I understand how that could maybe lead you to imagine something, but then, like, she starts predicting the future?
Yeah, and I just don't understand how the counselor was leading her if it was all happening in her brain and he was like, yeah, you did a great job today. Like, how do you know? You don't know what she imagined.
How do you know, Tello?
Yeah. I mean, look, I like to read about weird culty stuff. So I was into the whole concept of this place as a thing for her to be obsessed with because it fits. But when she actually had the sessions with her person, with Tello, I was like, I'm very unclear on, it just was less interesting than I expected those to be. I thought like something like really super odd was going to happen. And it was more just like, okay, so you have a thought, now follow that thought and see where it goes. It's like, well, that's not that fucking groundbreaking.
That's thinking.
Yeah, we're just thinking in a room with another person who seems to be reading her mind. And then I'm not sure how that translates into making art, other than, like, she draws things that she sees in her dreams. But, like, is that
art?
Yeah, like,
well, it's like with the babies. They're talking about the babies, and they're like, oh, well, the babies are untainted, and they, each night when they dream, they go to the primal spring of create, and I'm like, no?
I'm pretty sure babies are just dreaming of, like, shapes and colors. Like, I don't think that anything wild is happening in a baby's head while it sleeps.
It's kind of like when a cat sleeps. Like, sometimes I'll look at my cats and be like, what are you guys thinking about? What are you dreaming about? And their little mouths will twitch, and I'm like, you're eating something. You're dreaming about eating.
You're running.
Yes. I don't think they're like, ah, yes, I have an idea for a film.
As far as what it adds to the book.
Silence.
I looked up like, oh, Kelly might have muted again.
No, I just had nothing to say.
I mean, I think it's interesting, especially, like, it really justifies Elise and Abby's obsession with this filmmaker, I guess, because if there's, like, a whole, like, pseudo-religion that jumped up around it, you know, clearly there's something there. Like,
just your classic for-profit religion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it also provided sort of a, kind of like, it was the place, initially Abby was like, oh my gosh, I can't imagine going to this place. It's so exclusive and cool. And once she got in, she's like, yeah, I can do whatever I want.
It's just, it, like, so, I mean, she already thought she was special, and then she went to the place where the only thing anyone thinks there is that, like, we're the most special people. And we have the most special things. And we have masquerade balls that are kind of gave me an Eyes Wide Shut vibe at first.
Which, like, brings us back to Scientology, you know?
Yeah, I was like, this is going to be an orgy, like, for sure, right? Like, that's definitely what's going to happen. It didn't.
It seems like it wasn't not that.
Yeah, I feel like there was some orgying happening.
Well, why didn't just I get not... to see it, though?
Yeah, I just don't think that was, like, Elise's jam because she was too busy being, like, passed out.
Yeah. Honestly, an orgy might be more artistic than some of what was actually that what we got to see.
Yeah.
That party, or it might have been a different party, like, felt like the most realistic part in the book to me when Elise is super, super drunk or high or something, and Abby has to drag her to the car. Yeah. And is mad, and I'm like, oh yeah, I've been here.
I've been both of those people. I've been the one that's like, time to go, and I've been the one where it's like, oh, thank you for taking me out of there.
Yeah, it was very. It had really definitely like Lindsay Lohan vibes again, where she's like sitting in the seat, like the picture of Lindsay Lohan in the car with like her hoodie and like her head tilted back. Mm-hmm. Is really what I was imagining in that. Yeah.
How's Lindsay doing these days?
I don't know. She went to Mykonos. Never forget the incredible video of Lindsay Lohan dancing in Mykonos. I will include a link in the show notes.
That's what's important.
If you haven't seen it, though, it's pretty hilarious. I definitely recommend. She just is, like, dancing and, like, really feeling herself. Yeah. She thinks she's, like, doing a really good job dancing, and she's not.
Well, that sounds also exactly like me.
Me too.
I'll just be vibing, and then I see... Like my wedding video is a great example of this. You know? I felt like I was in a music video.
And then you're I a much saw better dancer.
And I was like, that's not how humans should move their bodies. Like, you know,
no, you're much better.
I'm going to blame
it on Lindsay Lohan is really doing the most in this video. She's, like, part one of her... dance moves that she does like three different times is that she like backs up and then leans over and like shakes her hair and then like I'll send it to you.
Okay.
Don't worry.
If this place was real, Lindsay Lohan would 100% be a member.
Yeah.
100%. Like circa 2005. Like I'm about to be taken more seriously and then just like fucks it all up for herself.
Yeah.
Okay, so we should talk about the end. Because a lot of stuff happens, and it happens pretty fast. Too fast, maybe. Like, speaking of whiplash, Mary, this is where I was like, whoa. Things have
big
gone
time.
Places. So does someone want to explain?
I would be thrilled to.
Just what happens.
Please.
Yeah, go for it. It's so fresh for you.
It's so fresh. Abby leaves Elise's house and says, like, this is for the best. I guess we should say Elise is pregnant.
And just got married.
Abby leaked a bunch of information, which I guess wasn't, like, 100% true, because a lot of it she dreamed. But... seemed true enough. She basically was like, yeah, you know, what was his name?
Raphael.
Yeah, Raphael is cheating on her and with a lot of different women. And in her dream, they were also like doing horse stuff.
Yes.
Like wearing horse tack and stuff. And when Elise confronts him about it, he doesn't deny anything. He's just like, it's not a big deal. And their marriage, their very new marriage, starts to collapse. Abby is gone at this point. She goes and lives with Paul.
Well, also, for like, at the wedding, Abby, while she's, like, sitting at a cafe across the street, like, yes. spills every detail of Elise's life to a tabloid photographer.
Yes. And then says that she's somebody else.
Yeah.
So all of that comes out. It's ruining sort of, like, the plan Elise had for herself. Abby goes, lives somewhere else, lives with Paul, and kind of just bides her time a little bit. She goes and visits her sister, who she's sort of estranged from, sees that her sister is just, like, living in a trailer with her new baby, and it's, like, clear that her sister is, like, maybe on pills and not she's really taking care of herself. She's definitely on pills. She's not taking care of herself. Not super taking care of the baby either. And it's just, like, a sad situation. Instead of saving the baby from her sister, which she considers, she thinks, no, no, I have an idea. And she goes back to L.A., continues biding her time a little bit, and then at the costume ball, the annual costume ball, which she went to the previous year, she goes and steals Elise's baby! And she leaves. And you would think, well, that's crazy. That's, like, wild enough for one book. But no, it doesn't end there. She takes the baby. She goes to Sweden or what? Switzerland, wherever. She finds the filmmaker, goes up to his house, and is like,
which she saw in a dream.
I'm here. Saw this in a dream. I'm ready. And he's like, okay, cool. Come into my home. I do have 12 children who live here at all times.
They are making art.
They are making art. And when these children become older, I will get new children.
It's creepy, not just in, like, a potentially, like, predatory way, but also it's, like, legitimately scary. Like, why is there a house full of artistic kids?
I don't know.
Little artsy entitled children. That live with
him. I mean, like, on one hand, he did seem to be taking care of them.
Okay. It's still scary. That's like the plot of a horror movie.
It is.
Okay.
And like, they live happy ever after?
I go. Artistically ever after.
Yeah.
The Abby and Augusta story. Okay, so here's my problem. I'm into how, like, wild that is.
Yeah, me
like,
too.
Like, give me more of that. That is insane. But my problem was, like, it feels like Abby's sister only exists
mm-hmm.
as just a reason for her to be able to put this plan into or, like... Because she steals her yeah. sister's identity, and that's how she,
yeah,
that's part of her larger plan here. But, like, other than that, like, why is her sister even in this book? That's it, no right? reason. And why didn't you steal that baby? If you're going to steal a baby, like, you should have taken both babies. You can handle two.
Yep.
Can she?
No.
Nope.
No. This other baby is in serious danger.
Like, how about you take no babies?
No, yeah. I mean, if we're gonna... While we're talking about taking babies, what you should really do is take no babies. But if you're already going to steal someone's identity and then also steal a baby and take it out of the country, I mean, you might as well make it two. Like, you're gonna go to jail, right?
I don't think she will. I don't think they'll ever find her.
Well, I feel like Elise, like, should suspect.
Oh, yeah.
That's how her baby got stolen. Like, hey, is there anyone who's, like, you know, done some weird shit lately? Oh, yeah.
But I guess she doesn't know that Abby has been at the rhizome. And yeah, because the baby been, like, disappears out during. In LA. Yeah.
And also, but still. It seems like even at the end, Elise genuinely thinks Abby is her friend.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And you wouldn't want to think it's your friend, yeah.
Yeah.
It's just like the thing that, again, like I like a wild tale, so I'm cool with it.
Here for that part.
But the idea that like a very famous person's kidnapped child would never be found and this wouldn't be investigated a little, like, there's no way that,
yeah,
I keep thinking like there's just no way that it really ends there. Even yeah. though I think we're supposed to think it just ends there and she lives there with that baby forever and she turns that kid into a little artist. And maybe then she goes on a murder spree because I really think that's where her life is headed.
She also, I'm sorry, I left out maybe the most wild part. She takes supplements so she can lactate to breastfeed the baby.
Yeah, how did, right.
Which,
how
like, did we forget that? You can use formula.
They yeah. make things for this.
That was my first thought, was like, you don't have to do this. My second thought was like, what? Can you? Can that really happen?
It does not sound.
Can you just like, make yourself provide milk by being around a baby a lot who's hungry?
Let's do a Google. Let's ask Dr. Google. It was fenugreek lactation. People use this to increase their milk production.
But yeah, like if you were not pregnant at any point, like can you produce milk?
If you're not This is very important.
How best to lactate way without getting
to
pregnant.
Induce lactation if you're not pregnant.
Can you tell none of us have kids?
Okay. This took me to a message board and someone said, I'm going to make a pizza out of human breast cheese.
No.
That's where we began.
No.
I've never heard the term breast
cheese. I want to try to induce lactation in myself because the thought of someone else's booby milk makes me gag.
Then why would you do that in the first place?
Just use other cheese. Listen, I want a pizza really bad, but it has to be made from my own breast milk.
That is so upsetting.
Oh my god. There's a $5.99 like special at Domino's this week on the medium breast milk cheese pizza.
No. I want to go through and just go down this rabbit hole. I mean, I know you can lactate when you're not pregnant, so like, I feel like you could.
I genuinely don't know, and I feel like maybe I should because I am a person with breasts, but I have no idea. Anyway, yes, that is another wild piece of the wild ending. I enjoy the insanity of all of that. I did feel like it all happened really quickly, though. And I was like, whoa, what?
Yeah.
No, it felt a little, like, rushed.
Well, and it just felt, yeah. It felt impossible that she would get away with it, is the thing.
Yeah.
That's the main issue.
Love that she tried, though. I mean, what a swing.
Love that for her.
She takes big swings, this girl.
She does. For what?
No, she could have
shown up to the director's house on her own. She didn't need to take the baby.
That's my question about this whole book, is for what? Because why? Because what is this book? Like, what is the point of this book? Why does it exist? What is it trying to say?
I don't know.
I don't know either, and I didn't ask that question. None of these questions are, like, deep or analytical. I'm just like, what happened?
That's the thing. I'm not saying that books have to, like, always be, like, about, like, a thing. But, like, it's frustrating to me when I finish a book and I feel nothing and I feel like my life has, like I learned nothing. I feel nothing.
You learned about fenugreek.
Well, okay.
And now
I learned something.
You're like, I didn't want to know about that.
Yeah. I just felt like I have no idea, like, what this book wanted me to feel. It left me feeling completely empty.
Like a vessel?
Like a vessel.
Like an actor?
Yeah, like an actor. I don't understand why it exists.
Well, on that note, Kelly, what's your rating?
Because it's also not marketed as... Wait, what'd you say?
I said, on that note, what's your rating?
Oh. It's marketed as, like, a literary, like,
right,
thriller or something. And I'm like, maybe if this had been marketed as a commercial thriller, I would have, like...
I think it was pretty literary.
But, like, it's not because it has nothing behind it.
Yeah. Okay, I think my rating is, like, quote, literary fiction doesn't have much behind it, but that's just me.
Yeah, that's true, but, like, this felt especially, like, empty, I guess, compared to other things that I've read that were, like, at least trying to say something. I legitimately don't know what this book's mission is, like, what it, like... that being said, I did read it really quickly, and for that, I will give it 2 stars. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk.
This is Mary. I will say, I'm struggling between a 2 and a 3. On one hand, there were some passages in this that I thought were genuinely nice writing wise, and I really liked some of the descriptions in this, but then also, like, I did not enjoy being in Abby's head. So, like, I want to give it a 3 for, like, writing and pacing and genuinely surprising me a few times, but I want to give it a 2 because it made me mad. Like, it put me in a bad mood.
And someone should be punished for that.
Yeah.
I'm just going to give it a straight up 3 because while I had some issues with it as discussed, I did, like, enjoy the process of reading it. Like, I looked forward to picking it up again, and I read it really quickly, and sometimes that's all I really want anyway. Like, I'm okay with it maybe not saying that much. This was, like, the type of book I wanted to read right now. So,
yeah,
I'm going to give it a 3. Like, I enjoyed it. I'm not going to, like, run out in the streets and tell everyone to buy it either. But I liked it.
Yeah.
That's fair.
The end.
Sorry for being so negative.
Okay. I mean,
I'm also just, like, not having a great day. So I think, like, fair. All of my feelings were amplified because of my current situation. But also, I've just been thinking about it after I finished reading. Because after I finished reading it, I was like, oh, maybe a 3. Because you're right that, like, it's not like the process of reading it was unpleasant. Like, I did, I read it quickly. I did, like, want to know what happened. Like, I wanted to know where it was going.
I am interested to read her other book, which is it's like a collection of connected short stories. And
okay.
It, like, I've read some good things about it. And, like, a few reviews I read of this book were saying, like, it's not as good as that other one that she had. So I'm like, huh, maybe I'll check that one out. Which I also read an interview with the author that she... This started out as, like, a short story. Like, these characters were in a short story. And then she realized, like, it was much longer than that, I guess. And kind of turned it into that. But initially, it was, like, these were just some characters that she had in her head. And it was shorter. So I am kind of interested to read her shorter stuff. Because this could have been shorter. But I still read it fast.
I think she could have kept it at the short story length. I think that could have worked out.
All right, well, there you have it, folks. Let's move on. We do have some feedback for Dossel, which I will read when I find it.
Also, I have to say that the other day, after one of my foster kittens got adopted, the adopter texted me and was like, oh, she's so sweet. She's very docile. And I was like, oh, triggered. I'll never be able to hear the word docile again.
Yeah. It just means slave. No. Okay, so this is RJ from Chicago. Hi, it's RJ, and I'm back to give my 2 cents on docile. Thank you for pointing out the concerns expressed in many of the book reviews, such as lack of intersectionality regarding race, class, and slavery. You covered all the main red flags that popped up for me while reading it. I feel like this book thought it was deeper than it actually was. We agree with you, RJ. I found the world-building lacking, especially with no acknowledgement of slavery in America's history and the systemic racism that persists in our present. And I will never get over that one of the few black characters in the book was named Onyx. How did that get through developmental edits, beta reads, sensitivity readers? Overall, this was a tough read for me. I felt awful for Elisha watching him deteriorate as he's brainwashed, assaulted, belittled. Kudos to those of you who made it through the audiobook. After hearing that sample of Alex on the podcast, I would have DNF'd it after a few chapters. That being said, the discussion of docile made for an excellent episode. I really enjoyed each of your points about the book, and I'm looking forward to your next book selection. Wishing you all a healthy and happy December, RJ.
Thanks, RJ.
Yes, I'm glad you liked the episode and agreed with us. And the further I get away from that book, the more I have that feeling that, like, wow, it really did think it was doing something.
Yeah.
That it wasn't. Yeah.
Agreed.
Have anything to say about that?
Thank you for agreeing.
Thank you for writing in.
I mean,
we love hearing from people.
Yes.
Yes.
All right. What
I talk about a wild book.
Yeah. We're on a streak right now.
Quite an experience. We're really on a roll here.
Yeah, truly. Is that good or bad? I don't know.
Up to you to decide.
But yeah, thank you, RJ, and we hope that you have a healthy and happy December too, and a happy new year.
Yeah.
Okay, what's on the blog?
Well, Emily has a lot of stuff on the blog. Emily has 12 Days of Christmas movies still happening. You know, Christmas has passed, so Merry Christmas to you and yours. But you can catch up on those recaps. And then she also has His Dark Materials recaps for the new season.
As we are recording this, this week is the Bachelorette finale. So by the time you hear this, we will have recapped that. But then hang tight, because the Bachelor is starting like immediately after. So we're going to just blaze right into that season already in full critical mode.
Why are they doing this to Bachelor Nation?
I don't know. I mean, I get that we were deprived of content for a while, but I also don't need, I don't need them to double it.
Now I think they're just desperate to get back on their regular schedule. Yeah. So they're like, this is when The Bachelor would be starting normally, so let's just do it.
Yeah.
Because then they want to be able to do Paradise.
They don't seem concerned with their regular schedule when they're like doing a rose ceremony at the beginning of the episode or something, you know?
Oh, the format is way out the window by now.
Or when they're doing like 4 hours of content in 1 week.
Yeah.
For no reason.
Which is what's happened the past 2 weeks. Us like a full-on week to write the recap, because it was so much to watch. And they're smushing the last 2 episodes into the same week, too, which is great. Just great, everyone. Thanks for following along with that. It's a really heated contest that I'm still losing. What else?
What's up next? Mary.
Next time, we're going to be talking about Wonder Woman 1984. I know very little about this, as was evidenced on the last episode. but I am excited to watch it. It's going to be available for streaming on HBO Max, which is very exciting. I just haven't seen like a new movie in a long time. So I think I'm going to do it up and, like, make some popcorn and just have, like, a little movie night in my house.
Yeah.
You know what? We bought a projector. Ooh. Like, a little mini projector, and we haven't even used it yet because it's been too cold. So maybe.
Well, this seems like the perfect way to break it in.
Yes. Yeah.
Our next that will be January. Episode.
Wait.
Oh.
Sorry, when is that? January 11th?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then
January 11th.
And then on January 25th.
On January 25th is our next book episode, which will be on Luster by Raven Leilani, which is a very popular book and a very beautiful cover. So
I recommend
some sexy stuff happening in it. Mm. So
sexy like docile?
I think a different kind of sexy.
True sexy. Hopefully.
I hope. So yeah, read that. It's supposed to be pretty good. I'm excited to read it and talk about it because I know a lot of people who have read it and recommended it to me. So yeah, looking forward to that. Read along with us. If you have any comments, questions, feedback of any kind about anything, or especially The Paper Wasp, you can email it to us at thesquad@booksquadgoals.com. You can find us on social media. We are on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Book Squad Goals. Please subscribe to our podcast on whatever podcast app you use. You can also leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts if you want to give us a gift for Christmas. That would be so kind if you would leave us a rating and review. It is so helpful for new people finding us. And we love to hear from you. So honestly, like, just let us know what you're feeling. Let us know, you know, we're still accepting favorite things of 2020 that we're going to be reading on our next episode that people have submitted to us. So let us know if you have a favorite movie, TV show, book from 2020 that we didn't
mention.
I have,
like, let us know more favorite things.
Yeah.
Because Todd was like, why didn't you pick this? Why didn't you pick this? That was this year. And I was like,
You can do an honorable mention.
Well, Todd can write in some of his other things, even though he did tell, he told us one already, but yeah. I want to hear more.
We would love to hear more from all of you. And 2020 has finally come to an end. You know, I'm happy about it, but also, like, 2020 ending doesn't mean that anything's going to be better.
For a while.
Sorry to end it on a bummer.
Yeah, but, I am seeing a lot of people act like it's going to just, like, clear the slate. It's like, this is not an Etch-a-Sketch. Mm. Shit is still happening exactly the same, just the calendar changed.
So, you know, everybody's still going to go see fireworks on New Year's Eve and get COVID, so.
Yeah. Please continue to be.
I got invited to a New Year's Eve party, and I was like, what? No.
Yeah, no. Please continue to be safe and careful. You know, wear a mask. Don't gather in groups. Only go places outside. Don't indoor dine, for the love of God.
But do support your favorite local restaurant by getting tickets.
Yeah. You know, please be safe. And also keep in mind that, like, just because we have a new year and a new administration coming up, like, things are still really, really fucking fucked in this country.
Oh, it's not funny. I don't know why I laughed.
I mean, it's funny in that way where, like, you know, being...
If you don't laugh, you'll cry.
Yeah, like, I find nihilism to be hilarious. But, you know, please just, like, be aware of the world and don't stop educating yourself and trying to learn and be a better person. And Happy New Year, and thank you for spending this year with us, however much of it you spent with us.
Yes, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Okay, bye.
Or, you know, miserable New Year.
Wow.
A wish for a Happy New Year. Okay, that's it.